Nerds Amalgamated, a podcast that covers the latest events in science, pop culture, and gaming.
I'm the professor, aspiring game developer, sci-fi aficionado, and completely and undeniably a geek trying to take over the world. I'll be breaking down the news from tech to gaming.
I am the DJ, a humble nerd, a big weeb, and a watcher from the halls of the multiverse. Just kidding. Anyways, I'll be breaking down all things comics to movies to anime.
Join us and stay hydrated as we quench you with witty banter, unintentionally hilarious hot takes, and trivia more fun than a night at the pub, courtesy of Nerds Amalgamated.
Welcome to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated. I am the DJ.
And I'm the professor.
BPM's out again, I see.
He is, and I've got COVID, so apologies for the odd voice.
So for our topics for this week, we have the OpenAI video launch, a game dev investigation into the game key sellers, and meaty rice. So
that last one sounds delicious.
Oh, so delicious. I really want some after a fun day at work today. Anyways, on to our show. So I've got an interesting question for you, Professor.
Go on.
How would you like it if you were to watch a movie that was fully AI?
Well, I'd be a bit disappointed that we've gone for this instead of getting AI to automate, like, cleaning toilets or something.
So the story goes, on the weekend, OpenAI has unveiled a generative artificial intelligence tool called Sora, and this is to create hyper-realistic videos marking the San Francisco startup's first major encroachment onto Hollywood. And by the way, this is 1 year since the whole meme of Will Smith eating spaghetti and sandwiches and what.
I don't remember that meme. What was the deal behind it?
It was just to highlight the power of AI, essentially.
So it was AI-generated images of Will Smith
eating, like, spaghetti and all that. Yes. It was funny.
Zimmers will really meme anything, won't they?
But yeah, so so this thing launched, and my God, I've seen some of the videos about this. Even Marques Brownlee talking about this video, and he is shocked, amazed, and awestruck by this level of technology. You've seen this video, haven't you? You've seen the AI videos, haven't you?
Yeah, some of them are surprisingly convincing.
Oh yeah. On face value, when you see it, you cannot tell the difference. Like my favorite one is the puppy video.
The one where the puppies have like snow on their faces.
Yeah. That one. I saw that and I just went, that looked good. I mean, really, it was like, that looked good.
So yeah, this is a big step up from something like deepfakes.
Oh yeah.
You don't even need a model.
Nope.
You just type in what you want and you get an output.
So the procedure goes like this. So the system can seemingly produce a video of complex designs with multiple characters, an array of shots, and mostly accurate detail of the subject in relation to the background. A demonstration was rolled out, as I said, during the week. And man, some of them look so... like that puppy video, for example. My other favorite one is the woman that walked down the road.
I haven't seen that one.
You haven't seen that? Oh, that
no.
One.
Oh, but the description of it reminds me of how excited people were over the first video recording, mm-hmm. which I'm pretty sure was the one of the train coming into the station.
Okay.
And it's something incredibly mundane. And we're like, why would you even film that? But at the time, it represented a huge leap in technology.
The crazy part about it is ever since that came out, Hollywood has gone mad.
I understand why. The robots are coming for their jobs.
Oh, yeah. So According to this Hollywood Reporter article, Carla Ortiz, a concept artist who's worked on several Marvel titles, has said this. This is a clear alarm to the unions and professions who are in the crew in any capacity. This shows that the tech is here to compete with us. This is only the first step. And what another person, Reed Southern, another concept artist who credited in The Hunger Games, Transformers The Last Knight, and The Woman King, said this. I have heard a lot of people saying they've left film. I have been thinking of where I can pivot to if I can't make a living out of this anymore.
Well, that's something a lot of people have been saying about AI for a while, that at the moment it is coming for your jobs. And even though it is limited to creative jobs at the moment, we discussed it a few weeks ago with the SAG-AFTRA.
Oh, yeah. And how
the AI is coming for your jobs. What are you going to do when you can't work anymore because the AI is taking your job?
Oh, yeah. And this is what we're seeing right now. I mean, this is the... Hey, SAG-AFTRA, if you're listening to this, this is the bed that you that you're going to lay in. Enjoy that bed while you can.
Well, the difference is this is not just replacing the actors. It's replacing everyone involved in making a movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Although, even though it's replacing this one, even if it's replacing everyone in the production side of things, right now it's just limited, as OpenAI basically said. The current model has weaknesses. It may struggle with accurately simulating the physics of complex scene and may not understand specific instances of cause and effect. It also added that the model may confuse spatial details of a prompt, for example, mixing up left and right, and may struggle with precise descriptions of events that take place over time, like following a specific camera trajectory. Although I feel like that's cap, but at the same time, I could see it.
Really?
Yep.
Are you trying to fit in with the Zoomers again?
Yes, I am.
You're too old for that.
I may not be.
Give up. You'll never be young again.
Okay, but that's it, though. What they're saying is, I think it's, while they may have a point, on the other hand, that puppy video, it says otherwise.
I can think of a whole bunch of subreddits that are just out of business now. Or the cuddle puddle, cute baby elephant gifts, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Although I did see today that Reddit is actually working on selling their content to AI companies. And I have to dig into it deeper because I'm really curious. I know they say in the terms of service, anything you upload belongs to Reddit. But so much of the stuff on Reddit is gifts from movies and stuff that don't actually belong to Reddit. So can they really sell that? I don't know.
What's going to be scary about this, now seeing the video generation of AI, is going to be, what other uses they're going to be putting into this? Like, are we going to see animations being used as well? Like, imagine recreating animated movie using AI.
I'm more worried about the potential for deepfakes, because now you don't need a model. You just need to type in your prompt. Did you hear a couple of weeks ago there were deepfake audios of Joe Biden being used in robocalls?
About that.
Yeah, so people are using an AI to generate audio that sounds just like Joe Biden. Well, to do a deepfake in video, traditionally you needed an actor who slightly resembled the person you want to clone. With this, you don't need an actor at all, so anyone could just type in Joe Biden walking down the street and get a video of that. How long until we're seeing it generate distasteful things in an attempt to discredit politicians?
I know we've been looking at more on the negative side of things, but think about the positive side. Let's think about the positive side of things, okay? Like, can you imagine, like, using this level of video creation, you can, like, recreate crime scenes, for example?
Oh, please no. No, we do not need an AI hallucinating and framing someone for a crime.
What do you mean?
A terrible application of this.
Well, okay, how? How is it a terrible application of this?
If you ask an AI to fill in details from a security camera or something along those lines, how do you know it's not going to just pick someone out of the crowd and turn them into the murderer?
Oh.
It could make up someone entirely fake. It could come up with someone who plausibly looks like you.
I guess so, yeah. I guess, yeah, I can see that. Yeah. But you can also, you can also use it into, and I said recreating crime scenes. I mean, like, let's say that, for example, the murder has been done. Like, we'll use AI to recreate the scenarios that happened that way. You know, like those, remember air crash investigators? They'll be like, this is what happened when the aircraft, before the aircraft happened. This is a likely scenario. That kind of way.
So you'd just be generating footage based on what you know exists.
Yeah.
And I don't see how that's different from just putting actors out of work, because now you don't need actors for filming a reenactment. You're just using an AI. How is that different from you don't need actors to film your movie? Just use an AI.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Yep, that's true. And that's also going to be an interesting thing, how the actors are going to get, like, you're right, but the actors, they'll be really cheesed off now. I mean, Hollywood's already started becoming very, very angry about this.
As I imagine anyone would. Having your job threatened is not a very comfortable position to be in.
Yep, yep. I'm just looking at some of the other stuff in the article. It said, someone also said, it's going to demolish our industry. Everybody's pitching projects using generative AI now. We're already getting screwed.
There's also the copyright side to look at this from, because we know that they're using copyrighted material to train their AIs, but they're not paying the people who created that copyrighted material. Like the SAG-AFTRA deal we talked about a few weeks ago protects the actors. What about the screenwriters and the graphics effects artists?
Yeah, that's going to be painful. That'll be painful. That'll be really painful. I mean, what was it? I just saw a little... I saw... Now that you mentioned it, there was an AI study... there was a study that was surveying 300 leaders across Hollywood issued in January, reported that 3/4 of the respondents indicate that AI tools supporting the elimination, reduction, or consolidation of jobs at their companies. Over the next 3 years, it is estimated that nearly 204,000 positions will be adversely affected.
We're already seeing that, because there are companies that are firing their customer support staff and replacing them with GPT.
When you're saying the staff, so these include sound engineers, voice actors, concept artists. They're standing at the forefront, according to the study. Visual effects and other post-production work are also cited as particularly vulnerable. These positions, among others, are increasingly seen to be replaced by AI tools if tech continues to advance.
Which it will. We've reached a plateau yet.
I think we have reached the plateau. I mean, it's come to the point where companies can now willy-nilly do anything now. Like, remember how Warner Brothers are now willy-nilly canceling movies? Like, they canceled the Batwoman movie, they canceled
Oh, yeah. Now they can get an AI to cancel movies for them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They'll be like, okay, thanks to AI for monitoring the scores of the audience, your movie sucks. We're going to cancel that. The plateau has started.
No, technologically, we're nowhere near a plateau.
Okay.
It's just accelerating.
Yeah, okay.
Think about where we were 5 years ago, and then a year ago, and then a week ago.
Oh, yeah. So, that being said, are you going to see more unions pushing, having a bigger push, and we're going to see more and more strikes at this point, now that this has come out?
I hope so, because I've said it before, but we're heading towards a massive societal change. When robots can do all of our jobs, what are we here for?
Oh, I know the answer to that one. We are here to just sit down and make nutrients for the future generation, like the Matrix.
Yeah, so if you have robots doing all the creative jobs, that just leaves people to do the cleaning and the farming and stuff. Well, we've already seen farming be massively automated over the last 100, 150 years or so.
Yep.
So they're actually groups working on AI, using AI for farming, like robots that will be able to pluck off bugs without using pesticides.
And it's going to be another few more years before AI starts entering into the medical field and finding a cure for cancer, bizarrely.
It's a possibility. I think where we might see novel approaches come from AI, but I'm actually, I used to run Boink on my computer, the Berkeley Open Initiative for Network Computing.
Yep.
Which is a distributed computing solution where people can run projects across millions of computers. And some of the projects used to be things like protein folding. So that's a case where you just need a bunch of computer power. And basically, I was donating part of my computer power to be part of this global supercomputer. I wouldn't be surprised to see an AI get implemented into a Boink project in the near future.
The other interesting thing is going to be how many big actors are we going to see leave the job, essentially?
The big actors are safe.
You reckon?
Nobody's going to replace them until the last minute.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's the extras who are the ones who should be worried. Especially the last couple of years with COVID. There's some really interesting videos about how they filmed scenes with crowds while there were no COVID restrictions. And in some cases, they entirely generated the crowd based on using VFX. So I reckon the extras and small-time actors are going to be the ones to hit first. You're still going to get your star power pull from people like Brad Pitt and, I don't know, who's a big actor?
George Clooney.
George Clooney, yeah. You're still going to get star power pull from them. So you still want them attached to your project. But eventually, they will be replaced too.
The other, here's a funny angle to put for this one. Can you imagine adult-only content made by AI? I think I killed the professor.
No, that was COVID. Yeah, so I don't see why you think that's going to be different.
Really? You don't see it? I mean,
it's just AI creating videos and they happen to have naked people in them.
Yeah, but
what is the difference between that and an AI making a movie?
Yeah, but as you said, there will be no more you take out the actors in it, and you can all of a sudden just create a girl all of a sudden.
Yeah, and what's different between that and doing the same thing for the next Marvel movie?
Yeah, okay, good.
Except
point.
That in the Marvel movie, she wears slightly more clothes.
Although it'd be skin tight. Skin tight.
Yeah, it'll be a skin tight superhero costume. But it's going to cover the important bits.
Yeah.
Because you can't have these Marvel movies being rated too high or you're going to lose half your audience.
Yeah. The other, there is one section I don't think we've spoken about. I think we briefly touched on it. Animation would be very interested in this.
You know, I think there's going to be an artisan industry springing up.
Hmm.
People are going to pay extra for the artisan touch of knowing that every frame of your animated film was drawn by hand.
Oh, yeah. And this is why I like the 80s anime, because you have these animators, they have their attention to detail, it was all hand-drawn and no technology whatsoever. Like, technology wasn't that crazy compared to now.
Yeah, although in that case, we also had to deal with lower quality animation because there was the trade-off between the frame rate and quality of each frame. There were other issues with old anime, like Well, the effects weren't as detailed because they had to be drawn by hand.
Yeah.
And I swear I was going somewhere with this, but the brain fog is hitting, so...
anyways, we should move to our next topic while the professor has his brain fog.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You got a story, Professor, about an investigation on game key resellers.
Well, a few days ago, I was watching YouTube and it suggested a video by Bootcat Studios, a game developer, who did their own investigation into key resellers. You might have heard of them. We've spoken about them years ago. G2A, Kinguin,
yeah,
a bunch of other names out there.
Yeah, I remember G2A. That was a hoot and a half, as I recalled.
Yeah, so traditionally when we've spoken about them, we've said that you shouldn't buy from them because they use stolen game keys. They still do. They'll use a hacked credit card to buy copies of games and then resell them on G2A to launder the money. And when the sale goes through on G2A, you can't really revoke that key because you make the gamer unhappy. The gamer's not going to blame G2A. They're going to blame the game developer who took the game away from them.
Okay.
But this is a whole other avenue that the people were turning to scam game keys out of developers. So Bootcat Studios decided to do their own investigation after their friends pointed out, hey, we've seen ads for your games being on Kinguin, one of these key reseller sites.
I mean, normally that would be a good thing, wouldn't it? Like if your game is featured on the website, that kind of thing?
Not if you're not making money from it. Because the game was being sold 50% off, even though they've never had a sale on it.
Oh.
So if you think about the arbitrage, maybe somebody bought a copy of it when it was on sale and they're reselling it now. Can't do that if there's never been a sale. So where are they making their money? Because only an idiot would sell a game that they'd bought for a loss.
Just curiously, though, with websites like G2A and Kinglin and stuff, do the game devs have to sign a contract of any sort?
No, these are more like eBay.
Ah.
So on Steam, a game dev will sign up and fill out a contract and make an agreement with Steam to sell the game and take 30% cut and all that. On sites like G2A, it's more like eBay. People will post a game that they have and sell it to someone. Mm-hmm. And it works out. You can usually get games for a significant discount on these sites. But when you look into where they're coming from, they're all stolen. So in this case, Bootcat went and did their investigation and bought a couple of keys from Kinguin, checked where the keys came from, and realized the keys were coming from inside the house.
Oh.
These were keys that Bootcat had personally sent out to reviewers.
Wait. Aren't reviewer copies meant to be just for the reviewers and not to be sold by any circumstances?
That's the problem. Like, there's no way to guarantee that you're on Steam. So it's like if you are a member of the Oscars Association, whatever they're called these days, you get your For Your Eyes Only copy of whatever movie they want you to review.
Okay.
And those will come on a DVD that's stamped not for resale, and it'll usually have a code on it so that if it does turn up on eBay, they can track down who's reselling the movies. It's an individualized copy for the reviewer, and each reviewer gets their own individualized copy. But in this case, Bootcat was generating keys and giving them out for free to reviewers. So basically, a standard consumer copy of the game.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, and they found out there's this ring of fake reviewers who are contacting indie devs asking for copies of games that they then turn around and sell on Kinguin.
Oh, that's scummy. That's like influencers doing this shit.
Yeah. Scummy influencers.
To all the game devs that have been affected by this, I feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for you guys for going through that. That should not happen. Oh, that sucks. Ugh. Now I think about it. So this is like a new level of piracy we're seeing at this point, right?
It's worse than piracy. Because at least with piracy, the developer got the first sale. In this case, it's somebody else taking money from the developer. Like, with a pirate, the developer wasn't going to see any money for that anyway. But with a scam. Reseller,
yeah,
with a scam or a reseller, they're basically someone else is getting money for the thing you made.
And you don't get any money out of it in the end.
So I'd consider it worse than piracy.
Oh.
In fact, I've heard several developers say that they'd rather somebody pirate than buy through a reseller.
But piracy and this, at the end of it, it's no sum game for the it's a no sum game for the developer because they lose at the end. That's so okay. That being said, okay, with this revelation, has any of the companies like G2A and Kinglin, have they come out and said, okay, we're going to be looking into this? Has there been any fallout from this?
So if I remember correctly, in Bootcat's video, Kinglin did disable a couple of the accounts of the sellers, but not all of them.
Okay, that's good. That's good to hear. Is it too little too late, or is it...
Yeah, so I've just skimmed through the video again to check what happened. And Kinguin replied saying, well, these are the keys we have on record as somebody selling them. And then Bootcat looked into it further and found out that all of those keys were stolen.
So whoever buys... So at this point, like even if Bootcat has stopped all this, right? Someone out there still has a reviewer copy of the game, and will still copy and paste this.
No, the keys are only good for one use, but it's common to send out two or three copies to a reviewer, because in this case, some of the reviewers were asking specifically for extra copies so they could do a giveaway. So that's even scummier, because they're saying, can I have keys for a giveaway? And then selling them, making money off something that was supposed to be free to begin with.
So with this revelation, is there any like a body to help the game developers go, okay, we're going to put rules and regulations into this, or have they gone, they've washed their hands?
Well, Kinguin and G2A are never going to stop this because they make money off it. Yeah. They take a cut, just like eBay does. So I think the only thing that would cause a change would be a class action lawsuit. And I'm not sure that there are enough game developers who have been hurt enough to really make a class action valuable, because game developers are a fairly small group.
I get that they're a fairly small group, but the gaming industry, isn't the gaming industry like one big happy family kind of thing? If a game developer has broke his leg kind of thing, and the other game developers can come in and help him out and all that kind of, I thought that'd be like a one big happy family, like woohoo, yay.
Yeah, indie devs are a pretty tight-knit group from my experience.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they should be, like, even though they're a tight-knit group, they should be like, actions-wise, they should be like, okay, we should support our fellow indie dev brothers and sisters, you know?
Yeah, so I guess for the third week in a row, I'm not a lawyer, but I think class action is the way to go.
That being said, if they do a class action lawsuit for this, okay, if they do it, the question's going to be how big of a class action lawsuit is going to be, and... Who's gonna front this?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Because
you need to find a lawyer who's willing to take it on.
That's easy.
Funding for the lawyer.
Yeah, funding for a lawyer, that's a hard part. Like, you can't just start up a GoFundMe and just go, hey, guys, we're going to start a GoFundMe just to cheese off these, just to start a class action lawsuit. Every dollar counts.
And I bet also these companies are based in Asian countries where it's an extra level of difficulty to actually track down the operator and sue them.
So government red tape will also be involved. Wait, what about Steam? Could they sue Steam?
No, because Steam's not really the one being hurt by this. They don't really have anything to do with it.
Yeah, but okay, I get that. But then if you want to start something, you have to, if you want to start like a big class action lawsuit, you have to have like a famous person be the sacrificial lamb, essentially.
Yeah, so I have seen AAA games for sale on these sites. So maybe it's just that so far it hasn't been enough damage to be worth going after them.
But there is one more other question though. If let's say the class action lawsuit becomes a huge success, do you reckon that the effects of that class action lawsuit will be long lasting, or will it just be a temporary stopgap measure?
I bet it would just be temporary. Another one of these sites would probably pop up a week later.
There's always the dark web as well.
Yeah. Although getting it off the clearnet would be a benefit, because a lot of people don't have the knowledge to use the darknet just to save $10 on a game.
That's fair. Anyways, before we start crying for the game developers and feeling sorry for them even more, let's keep going to our next.
Hey,
to our final
I like
topic.
It when people feel sorry for me.
And how are they going to feel sorry for you? Are they going to feed you meaty rice?
I wouldn't complain. I'm pretty hungry at the moment.
So you chose this subject, didn't you, Professor?
I did.
So I'm just briefly looking at this. So the blurb of it is basically, scientists have created a new type of hybrid food, meaty rice, that they say could offer an affordable and eco-friendly source of protein.
Yeah, so you start with rice grains, add in a few ingredients, and grow meat cells on them.
Should I be scared about this?
No, it's just lab-grown meat on a different substrate.
The last time there was the whole idea of lab-grown meat, people were off-put by it. I don't know whether you remember this story, Professor, but I think it was in Sweden or somewhere in the world where they served a lab-grown steak to a couple of people, and people were really turned off by it.
Well, according to this article, Italy has actually planned to ban lab-grown meat. I think it's a cultural thing. People are just going to have to get used to it, because there's nothing actually different. It's just that you grew the cells in a petri dish instead of on an animal.
See, what's going to be fascinating about this is going to be, how are restaurants going to deal with this? I mean, can you imagine cutting a lot of cost in meat just to substitute it for meaty rice?
Well, it's also eco-friendly. I could see vegan restaurants getting onto this, because there's technically no animal suffering.
But that being said, though, like you have to ask yourself, like, where is the lab-grown meat made from? It's like you're gonna get a lot of questions about it. It's so similar to the cigarettes, you know. Like, we don't even know how cigarettes are made. And until they tell us how they're made.
Do you know how your steak is made?
All I know is it comes from a cow, and it gets slaughtered in the abattoir, and then...
Do you know how that cow was treated and how the meat is treated? Do you know how long it takes for the meat to get from the abattoir to your plate? Do you know that it's not contaminated?
Yeah, yep. Those types of questions, you're going to get that as well with the scientific one, with the meaty rice one.
You are, but I think it's going to be something you just get used to. There'll be health and safety regulations, obviously.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just in my mind right now. I'm just thinking of imagine meaty rice, the fried rice edition.
That sounds like it'd be really good.
I could totally see Uncle Roger right now just cringing at this idea. It's like, why is imagine Uncle Roger just eating a bowl of meaty rice and him just going, this is not right. There's something not right about this. And not to mention as well, like with what you're saying with Italy backing a ban on laboratory grown meat. The other thing that's going to be worrisome about having this sort of technology is how is this going to affect your genetics, for example?
It's not going to.
You don't think? It won't? Like,
no, it's just meat. It's literally just meat cells that happen to have grown on a substrate of rice.
I understand that. I mean, it's the same. I understand that. But at the same time, like, we're at the stage where GMOs is actually a big problem as well.
Is it a problem?
People complain about it,
but it's not a problem.
It could potentially be a problem. I mean, Monsanto.
The biggest problem with GMO crops is if they get loose and happen to destroy an ecosystem because they outcompete.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that's already happened with canola. You can find it growing on the side of the road in Canada.
The other problem you're going to have to see when it comes to stuff like this would be the fact that cooking practices are going to be so different.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out how to actually cook it. I imagine it would be something like cooking minced meat.
Yeah, and the other cost of meaty rice.
Yeah, they don't seem to mention the price, but they do mention that it is more eco-friendly than natural beef. It's 100 grams releases under 6.27 kilograms of CO2. 100 grams of naturally grown beef releases 8 times more, 49.89 kilograms. So it might even be worth it environmentally to have slightly more expensive meaty rice.
Can you imagine? I can imagine it now. Like, can you in restaurants, for example, imagine like do you want fried rice that costs $3.50 to make, or do you want this meaty rice that will cost $13.50 to make?
Yeah, I think it's also not just for us. I think another advantage of meaty rice would be for people in third world countries.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah.
A lot of research into improving the nutrition of grains and other staples is for third world countries because they already deal with famine. We don't really see famine in the first world anymore. But on the other hand, this has probably got distribution problems. I can't imagine it's easy to distribute meaty rice. You probably need a refrigeration chain, which normal rice doesn't.
There's going to be a lot of government red tape involved in this.
Probably. But I'm just imagining a burrito made out of this.
Old El Paso, meaty rice flavor. Anyways, on that note, we should go to our shout-outs. And for our shout-outs, we got a question from High Scores High Stakes podcast, and their question is the biggest obstacle to overcome as a podcast. You want to answer this one?
I'm not sure whether that would be getting viewers or being confident sprouting bullshit for people to listen to on the internet.
I think the biggest obstacle for me is, I need to word this right, trying to find the right opinions to not offend people. In this day and age, like, any opinion you say nowadays, you get totally cancelled. Wouldn't you agree, though, Professor?
No, it's pretty easy not to be cancelled.
How? How?
You're just going to not be a jerk.
I agree with you there. But nowadays, it comes down to differing opinions, and, you know, yeah. I can't say more. But thanks, High Scores High Stakes podcast, for for giving us this question. This is a fun question. Okay. On the 15th of February, 1972, sound recordings were granted U.S. copyright protection for the first time. So for works published before 1978, the maximum copyright duration is 95 years from the day of publication. For works created before 1978 but not published or registered before 1978, the standard 5-3... It's a symbol. 302 copyright duration of 70 years upon the author's death also applies. All copyrightable works published in the U.S. before 1929 are in public domain. Works created but not published or copyrighted before January 1st, 1978 may be protected until 2047. So does that mean all the Walt Disney stuff will get public domain by that will be protected until that date?
Yeah, we're actually seeing that come to fruition now. Steamboat Willie is now public domain. The Disney were also a big push for getting the copyright terms extended to be this long in the first place.
Oh.
But it seems like they've finally given up on that.
Although, mind you, I forgot to read the last bit. So, before 1972, sound recording were not subject to federal copyright, but copying was nonetheless regulated until various state torts and statutes. The Sound Recording Amendment in 1971 extended federal copyright to recordings fixed on or after 15th of February 1972 and declared that recordings fixed before that date would remain subject to state common law copyright. Subsequent amendments had extended this latter provision until 2067. Ah, dang.
Don't worry, the world's going to end before then.
You know, it's going to be interesting. Imagine playing Happy Birthday on a post-apocalyptic world, and they're like, oh no, I'm saying Happy Birthday, I'm going to be arrested. No! But you won't be arrested because the world's ended.
I think you'll have bigger problems.
That's true. On the 17th of February, 2024, it's the 35th anniversary of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. You've seen that movie, right, Professor?
I never have.
It's a fun movie. It's a 1989 sci-fi comedy directed by Stephen Herrick and written by Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon. This is the first installment of the Bill and Ted franchise. It stars Keanu Reeves, Alex Winter, and George Carlin. It follows Bill and Ted, who travel through time to assemble historical figures for their high school history presentation. This earned modest box office success, grossing $40 million against a $10 million budget. And Winter and Reeves reprised their roles in two sequels, Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventures in 1991 and Bill and Ted Face the Music in 2020. The screenplay was written by Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson in 1987 based on a comedy stand-up routine they had performed in college. Director Stephen Herrick called the screenplay incredibly laugh-out-loud, but recognized that because of some of the humor targeted at a specific audience, the film was either going to be a huge hit or a huge flop. And in 1991, co-writer Ed Solomon said that the characters of Bill and Ted were originally seen as 14-year-old skinny guys with low-rider bell-bottom pants and heavy metal t-shirts, who were despised by the popular kids at high school. Casting Reeves and Winter changed the filmmaker's image of the characters because once you cast Alex and Keanu, who looked pretty cool, they were hard to believe.
I'm a bit worried by the original title, Bill and Ted's Time Van. I'm glad they switched it to a phone booth because that sounds a lot creepier.
I can imagine the character playing as George Carlin character playing that and be like, hey guys, you want to join this band? It goes back in time.
It would probably work on me.
Although that was the original idea, but it deviated from the film version where they borrowed a van for 28-year-old friend Rufus. And while driving the van, they end up in Nazi Germany. And after hijinks, they brought the man with the funny mustache back to present-day San Dimas.
This isn't TikTok. You're allowed to say Adolf Hitler.
Oh, I know. And they did that to continue collecting other historical figures. But then Solomon said this approach became problematic, and Hitler was switched out with Napoleon in the final script. Alex Winter claims that he gets two types of letters from teachers: positive ones from history teachers for encouraging students to learn about history, and negative ones from English teachers for affecting the way students speak. Ah, fan mail. On the same day as well. It was the 40th anniversary of Footloose. Have you seen that movie as well, Professor?
I haven't seen that either.
But you've heard the song, right?
I've heard the song.
Footloose. And I don't know the rest.
Please
of it.
Don't sing it.
Oh, come on. You want me to sing it. Okay, so this was a 1984 American musical drama directed by Herbert Ross. It was a story of Ren McCormack, a teenager from Chicago who moves to a small town where he attempts to overturn the ban of Dancing Institute by the efforts of a local minister. It was received with mixed reviews from critics and was a box office success, grossing $80 million in North America, becoming the seventh highest film in 1984. The song Footloose by Kenny Loggins and Let's Hear It for the Boy by Denise Williams was nominated for Academy Awards for Best Original Song. The movie was loosely based on a town in Elmore City, Oklahoma. The town had banned dancing since its founding in 1898 in an attempt to decrease the amount of heavy drinking. One advocate of the dancing ban was the Reverend from the nearby town of Hennepin. Friar Johnson said, Hennepin.
I don't think he was Friar Johnson. He was F.R. Johnson, a reverend.
Fair enough. F.R. Johnson, he said, no good will ever come from a dance. If you ever dance, somebody will crash it, and they'll be looking for only two things, women and booze. When boys and girls hold each other, they get sexually aroused. You can believe what you want, but one thing leads to another. Wow, this guy.
Yeah, some people really need to keep their noses out of other people's business.
I mean, nowadays, if you dance and someone crashes into it, instead of women and booze, you get fists and ambulances. I mean, just go down to the nearest pub on a Saturday night and find out. And continue on the story. Because of the ban on dancing, the town never held a prom. In February 1980, the junior class of Elmore City's high school made the national news when they requested permission to hold a junior prom, and it was granted. The request to overturn the ban in order to hold the prom was met with a 2-2 decision from the school board when the school board president Raymond Lee broke the tie with the words, "Let him dance." And in the 2013 interview with Howard Stern, Kevin Bacon admitted he actually tipped DJs at weddings not to play Footloose. He stated that people expected him to dance to the song as he did in the movie. In truth, while he did some of this dancing, there were also a dancing double for him. Aww.
Have you just had your heart broken by finding out the movies aren't real?
Yeah, this is like people saying that the mall Santa is not the real Santa. Oh. Anyways, the dancing feats in the opening credits scene contained many of the cast and crew. Over 150 pairs of feet were shot. The dancer with the gold shoes was Kenny Loggins. And Kevin Bacon based his hairstyle on Rocker Sting's pikey hairdo, as he was a big fan of the Police at the time. He mentioned that he mentioned the band in one of the scenes. And on to our messed up moments in nerddom number 3. What have you got this time, Professor?
Have you ever seen a platypus?
Yeah. It's cute little animals with the duck bills and whatnot, yeah.
Yeah, so you're egg-laying aquatic mammals that are venomous.
Uh-huh.
Glow in the dark. Well, under UV light.
Yeah, yeah.
When they first sent a specimen of a platypus to England in 1799, the English were very confused and tried to dissect it, thinking it was a hoax.
What? What?
Apparently, zoologists just didn't think you could have something that looked that weird.
That better not be the messed up part. There has to be more to this messed up part. Okay, keep going. Keep going. I want to hear more about this.
No, that's the messed up thing. The people in England were so shocked by a platypus that they couldn't believe it was real. Zoologists everywhere hate them. And they're not that cute, when, especially if you've ever been stung by one.
Okay, I've heard that that platypus, they secrete a certain poison. Is it poisonous to humans, or is it poisonous to just other creatures?
They're not poisonous, they're venomous. They have male platypuses have spikes behind their legs, and the spike can inject poison, venom, which is not lethal to humans. But it is still a very bad day. And I've heard from people who handle taxidermied platypuses that even though the platypus is dead and does not contain any venom glands, being pricked is still a bad day because they make you bleed a lot.
Oh.
They're very sharp.
Oh. Anyways, on that note, we should go to our wacky movie. And on the 15th of February 1990, Moon 44 premiered in West Germany. This sci-fi movie enjoyed its theatrical premiere, and it starred Michael Pear and Leon Rippey. And here is the plot. An unconventional corporate agent is given the task of shaping a group of violent criminals and technical wizards into a helicopter defense force assigned to protect a mining station on a remote moon. Why does this sound like something out of Suicide Squad? I mean, it has all the elements. You got a corporate agent, they start a task force of violent criminals and technical wizards, and they have to do a dangerous mission. It sounds like a Suicide Squad.
I think you'll find that the trope of using criminals to complete a mission goes back a lot longer than you think.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Even in real life, criminals are often conscripted into the military with the promise of freedom after they've served.
Yeah, I've heard that. If only we could use that nowadays. So much. So this movie was the earliest big budget films of Roland Emmerich, the guy who goes on to write and direct such prominent sci-fi features as Universal Soldier, Stargate, and Independence Day. In the Australian New Zealand CBS/Fox video trailer of the film, the trailer had a Star Wars style crawl, which a voiceover was heard saying, "CBS Fox Video presents a galactic adventure from the excitement zone, Moon 44. By 2038, all natural resources have been depleted. Multiple national corporations have taken control in the universe. Rival corporations fight deadly battles over priceless mining planets in outer space." The voiceover in the trailer is also heard stating that the film is, and I quote, "the best adventure since the Star Wars trilogy, and the most suspenseful journey since Aliens." That's
I haven't heard of this movie before the last week. I doubt it.
That's cap right there. Anyways, on that note, that's all we have for this week. Where can they find us, Professor?
You can find us on Twitter or Facebook or our new YouTube channel, where we've started posting snips from our episodes.
They can also find us on Instagram and thatsnotcanon.com, where we have an archive of our old episodes. So that's all we have for today. Look after yourselves and stay hydrated.
And we'll see you next time. Here we go.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.